live,
at least in your mind, maybe in mine. It's the Mike Novak Show, beaming out of the Midwest to bring you gardening, environment, and green living news, views, opinions, rants, and even a song. I'll be singing along. How about you?
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes, and true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
Well, we recently celebrated Earth Day. And the idea that we have one day or even one week to focus on the planet and then move on back to our usual polluting and resource-consuming selves seems a little absurd, which is why I have this show every week, and I hope you listen to it. Now, today, in honor of Earth Day, which was April 22nd, and Arbor Day, which was April 24th, in case you missed both, I grabbed my little recording device and joined a group of people on the southeast side of Chicago at a place called Lake Calumet. For those who don't know Chicago, and for tens, maybe hundreds of thousands of Chicagoans who have never been there, I quote from Wikipedia, quote, Lake Calumet is the largest body of water within the city of Chicago. Formerly a shallow, post-glacial lake draining into Lake Michigan, it has been changed beyond recognition by industrial redevelopment and decay. Parts of the lake have been dredged and other parts reshaped by landfill. Together with the rest of the city of Chicago, the remnant of the lake now drains into the Des Plaines River and the Mississippi River Basin. Calumet is a Norman word used since the 17th century by French colonists in Canada for the ceremonial peace pipes they saw used by First Nations peoples. End quote. There you go. Don't say you never learn anything on this show. So why would people make a special trip on a raw, windy day in April, namely Earth Day, to visit a toxic, degraded lake? I think the point is that, unfortunately, many cities, large and small, in this country and elsewhere, have sections that, for one reason or another, usually the development of heavy industry, became dumping grounds for toxic materials and then were left to their own devices. Only now, well, we started a few decades ago, and then, you know, we paid attention for a while, and then we didn't pay attention. It's the way those things work. But we're beginning to realize that those chemicals won't go away on their own, that at some point we will have to look at our legacy as a species and literally clean up our act. Join me today on the Mike Novak Show for a trip to Lake Calumet within the city limits of Chicago, but for too many years, the abandoned stepchild of this metropolis. Our journey starts right after this.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I have great news. Natural Awakenings, Chicagoland's only monthly magazine dedicated to healthy and green living, is now available throughout Cook and Lake counties. We feature articles about fitness, local food and drink, gardening and environment, green energy, healthy kids and families, even healthy pets. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
It's not easy being green.
Tom Shepard has spent the better part of a couple of decades with the Southeast Environmental Task Force, which for 25 years has been a champion of the Calumet region of Chicago. I caught up with him after the hike on this Earth Day, but he puts the morning's activities into perspective.
Like that. It's not easy being green.
Tom Shepard with the Southeast Environmental Task Force. We're here at the shores of Lake Calumet on the south side of Chicago. It's Earth Day. It's brutally cold. And yet, a bunch of people showed up for a tour of the area. Yeah, you're shaking your head and going, what's wrong with these folks?
Right. It was amazing to get over here and see people that were here before I got here. And they just kept coming in and coming in. I don't know how many finally came. I don't have the final count, but it looked like maybe 80 or 90 people, something like that.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And they're still here, for heaven's sake. They're all having lunch now. That's
exactly.
Great.
Exactly. Yeah. And you also had busloads of kids come in.
Yes, we had three busloads of kids. We had one elementary school from the nearby Roseland neighborhood. That's Leviso School. And then we had two high schools. The nearby high school is Corliss High School, right in North Pullman. And then just a little further west is Morgan Park High School. So it was great to have all those kids out here today, too.
And this is your continuing mission to show people the resources, the diversity of the southeast side of Chicago.
Right, right. So, yeah, there's a couple of points, a couple of reasons that we do this each year. And one, like you said, is to showcase the diversity and the habitat and so forth that's out here. So many people don't know about Chicago's other lake, and that's being Lake Calumet over here. At one time, it was a large body of water, and then it was encroached upon and filled in over the years by industry and by garbage dumping and toxic waste dumping and a lot of industrial waste. We can see now from where we're at, I know your listeners can't see, but we can tell them that there are beautiful hills now of turf and
Because there's a golf course here, and that's just one of the things. But something that I brought up with some of the folks on the tour today was that you cannot get, right now, the average citizen, unless they come in to the golf course, really can't get to the shores of Lake Calumet.
That's true, and that's why it's important that we were out here. We had permission, and we had to jump through a few hoops each year to do this.
Well, that doesn't seem right. There's something wrong. What's wrong with that picture, Tom?
Right. It isn't as it was when I was a kid growing up, because we used to just walk across Stony Island Avenue or Doty Avenue out here on the other side and be able to come onto this property and throw a fishing line out or go hiking or just spend a day out here in nature and do what kids do. And then along the way, when the golf course was built, they threw up this big fence all the way around here. So it's closed off from the general public today. But that is part, another one of the reasons that we do this each year, is to get onto the property to show that it is important to get the public out here. And that was part of the reasons that the Millennium Reserve made it one of their priority items to have this open again to the public for recreational things like we did today, hiking, bird watching. Ultimately, we want to see canoeing and kayaking and fishing and other activities out here, and just getting kids out of the classroom or getting them to be able to come out here and appreciate nature and get away from their little gadgets and TV sets and stuff.
All right. The question I would ask, and other people might as well, is, well, why should I go to Lake Calumet, even though it is the largest body of water inside the city of Chicago? We're not counting Lake Michigan, obviously. But some people might say, oh, why would I do that? That place is so toxic. I mean, why? We're not going to go wandering around there. Go in the water with a boat? Are you crazy?
Yeah, you're right. Well, one reason is if we look across the water from here, we'll see an eagle's nest, and we have nesting bald eagles out here. You wouldn't think that's happening within the city limits of Chicago. We have a whole variety. This is one of a very important migratory bird stop, and it's called the Calumet Flyway. So, and it's deemed one of the 10 best birding spots in the state by the Audubon Society. So the diversity of birds that we have out here is one reason that folks might want to come out here to see all the birds and other types of wildlife, too, that are out here. This is just such a huge place. You just don't find this up in Humboldt Park or Logan Square, where a guy right. named Mike Novak lives, or up in Edgewater and Rogers Park and everything. This is a very unique place. If we brought them out here and closed their eyes and then suddenly opened their eyes, they would think that they might be in some other state or some other place. Or
you certainly wouldn't think you were within the city limits of Chicago. The marshes and the lake and the lands here.
Absolutely.
You can barely see the top of the Sears Tower. Well, it's not right. Sears Tower. It's a Willis and soon to be something else tower.
If we look right through here.
Okay, right through. There it is. There it is.
Here.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, it's open space, and this is all within the 10th Ward of Chicago, and it's the largest geographically speaking. It's the largest ward in the city. Probably you combine three or four other wards and still wouldn't be as big as the 10th Ward. So it's just amazing that all this is right within the city. And you hardly even see it from the expressway or the skyway. But
right.
Every time we bring newcomers out here, they say, I passed by here hundreds of times or thousands of times and just never knew that this existed back here.
So as you mentioned to the group earlier, you feel that in terms of developing in this area and finally opening it up to the public again, you're at the one-yard line, as you described it. What's that all about?
As I said, it was part of the a priority project of the Millennium Reserve, and we were successful in getting the state to donate enough money and the city and other agencies to purchase this property from the Port District. Where this is all Port District, Illinois International Port District land, and 282 acres were dedicated to become open to the public, and that's where we just had our hike today. And so that took us about 16 years, and that was many, many meetings going to the Port District and talking to state officials and talking to the city and pushing and pushing and pushing until we finally got that accomplished last October when Governor Quinn and Mayor Emanuel came out and did a ribbon cutting and an announcement and a glorious day for most of us that worked on this Lake Calumet vision for all those years. But then we have to finally get a new governor on board and have him, we have to persuade him to sign the okay to cut the check. So that's going to be getting the ball.
And given the financial straits that the state of Illinois is in and the austerity that he is pushing, do you see this actually happening?
Well, I do see it happening. I have to be hopeful, of course, and we're working on every channel that we can. The money has already been dedicated, so that the money is set aside as long as it doesn't somehow get rerouted.
Exactly, which money has a way of doing in not just in Illinois, but all over the country.
It has. But we want to invite the new governor to come out here. We want to invite the new director of the Department of Natural Resources to come out here and see it. We're right across the street, and as you know, historic Pullman's across the street. Recently, the president was out. And the governor came out that day, too, when the president made his announcement that Pullman would be a national monument, close to being a national park, pretty much the same benefits and everything as a national park would have.
And given that it's basically
right across
the highway, I-94, you expect that to draw people to Lake Calumet as well?
That's what we're thinking. And historically, Lake Calumet has an important component. And the building of Pullman, where they took bricks from the lake and they took clay from the lake to make the bricks to build the Pullman homes. And this was a playground for the Pullman people and the rest of the city of Chicago. At one time, it was a fantastic trapping area for mostly muskrats and beavers and other things. Then it became the a fishing paradise and a recreational paradise, and they had Athletic Island was out here, so there were boat races and all kinds of activities out here, historically speaking. So between Pullman becoming a national monument and this being open to the public, we think that this is going to be a very attractive place to be.
I guess you and I need to have some lunch.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Tom Shepard from the Southeast Environmental Task Force. And I can't tell you how much I admire your work and the folks who work with you to pull back to life an area of the city that's been neglected for so long.
That's for sure. Yep.
He's not denying it, folks. He knows. Well, you grew up here.
Yes, and thank you for all of your exposure that you've given us and advocacy that you have during all your years, too, Mike.
It's my pleasure.
People tend to pass you by because you're not standing out like sparkles in the water, stars in the sky.
Our trip started from Harborside International Golf Course at 111th and Interstate 94 in Chicago. From there, a bus would take us down the road a piece to a peninsula jutting out into Lake Calumet. While waiting for our transportation, we received a little geological, ornithological, and even political history of the region from historian Paul Petratus and UIC Professor Emeritus Dennis Nyberg.
Nothing happens here for a while. The Illinois Central is the dominant theme here. Kensington grows over here around the junction. I like to call it America's first railroad town. Two major roads meeting here. What makes it kind of cosmic is over here in Kensington, the railroads on one side came from southern Illinois. They ran on coal. The eastern roads, Michigan Central, ran on wood, so it's the only spot on the planet that had to serve both engines. So if you like trains, I do. Speaking of trains, there's this guy, George Pullman, who wanted to make better trains and built an empire on the fact that America will pay for quality. He decides that he's going to build his town, historic Pullman, here in the spring of 1880. Things begin to go. Fast forward to today, Pullman's a national landmark. Pullman's company paid dividends until 1981. Pretty good for an American company. From 1869 to 1981, they paid dividends. George got some bad press for being a control freak. Yeah. After all, his business plan was pretty much my way or the highway. But George Pullman was obscenely rich and did a whole bunch of interesting things with that money, including transforming the landscape. He planned to have a connection with the Calumet River here. Federal money didn't come in, so he had to take what was given him. Him and his partner, Colonel Bowen, were the ones that did the initial dredging here. And when the city of Chicago moved harbor facilities down here in 1906, they said, well, you know, it's already dredged. We'll start to develop this end. So in 1955-56, the Calumet Port is developed here on the site of the former Pullman Shipyard. This is a federal agency here. The housing for it became Altgeld Gardens. Federal housing is a very hip research topic nowadays. Boy, that's a couple thousand years in just a few minutes. Lake Calumet initially was this big thanks to Phil Pullman himself, the Pullman Company. George didn't do everything himself. He had people. 200 acres filled in here, tax-free land. The city of Chicago began filling in here. We're sitting on what used to be known as Mount Piscini, which is the name of the Chicago alderman that allowed dumping to happen here. And the joke was that the snow never really settled here. It always melted here because we really don't know what was buried here. There used to be three nice stacks here. We called the Three Sisters. That was the garbage dump. Mayor Daley famously said, there's nobody south of 95th, so thanks a lot. Mayor Daley number one never came down to Pullman. Mayor Daley number two got close. We have to say that Rahm did come here because he heard there was a big crowd due to the national park, so that's pretty cool. So we have good thoughts. We're thinking good thoughts about the National Park Service. already tourism past my front door has gone up tenfold. I live over by the church, the Greenstone Church, and we used to see about 6 people a day, and I think it's probably up to about 60. So the numbers are real, the interest is real. And Lake Calumet is right at our doorstep. Chicagoans are weird. They don't get around. People on the east side never get to Pullman. Don't need to. They've got everything they need over there. So we are separated by Lake Calumet, but today we're drawn together by Lake Calumet. And if you got any good history questions, hope I can answer them. The Underground Railroad resonated locally. We didn't have free blacks as landowners. Around Southern Cook County, most of the free blacks that you saw were blacksmiths. It's just the way it works. The Underground Railroad also came through Southern Cook County, and when Chicago was too hot, because there was always bounty hunters, black and white, it's always a brother want to sell a brother out. So you think you made it all the way up from Kentucky to here? Remember that Stevie Wonder song? You know, skyscrapers and everything, right? Well, what happened, you get all the way to Chicago, and somebody would turn you in and take the money from the Kentucky guys coming up to take back their slaves. So a lot of folks got off the Underground Railroad here. Our Underground Railroad site, right by Oakdale Gardens, the Tun House is here. His partner was up in Roseland. They moved the Maroons. The Maroons is the period name for the escaped slaves. Moved the escaped slaves from here to the Holman Bridge, to the Green Tree Tavern in Indiana, and out to Detroit. So you have to leave the home of the free to get free, which is, you know, that's a heck of a message. So just about every major historical period is represented in the greater Lake Calumet area, but the birds were here first, okay? How's that for a good segue? So yeah, the birds have been coming here since before Lake Calumet was here. It's been part of that flyway. I don't know anything about birds, so I'm here to learn as well.
Thank you, Paul. Okay, and I already introduced Dennis Nyberg, who will be out with us. Do you want to have anything to say before we go out?
Well, sure. One of the great things, I think, is that Wolf Lake and Lake Calumet are the only natural lakes in Cook County. All the other lakes that are in Cook County were built or constructed by people. I'm particularly interested in natural areas that are occupied by native plants and animals. And this there's a number of outstanding areas down here, a Powderhorn Marsh, Superior, Sand Ridge. There's quite a few in this sandy area. The sandy areas aren't so satisfactory for agriculture. And so that's part of the reason that these savannas and prairie areas have been a lot persisted as they were originally done were 200 years ago. The area we're going to be on today is not part of this fill. Much of the shore of Lake Calumet, or probably all of the shore of Lake Calumet, all of the shore of Wolf Lake has all been dumped on with slag. Slag is a relatively inert material, but of course it's changed the ecology, the flow of water, etc. So this area we'll be on today, which I have not been on, but I know by this situation is highly altered area it's been dumped on that. But birds, plants disappear quickly with human alterations. The animals, both the birds and the mammals, are able to persist. So you can find coyotes. I live in Hegrish. You'll see coyotes running through along the railroad line every once in a while. You see other animals. So animals in general are pretty more flexible. They can live in areas that have been highly altered. Plants disappear. The native plants disappear in those areas. Color
of spring. We'll be back with our tour of Lake Calumet right after I tell you that, holy smokes, kids, it's not even May, and I have in my hot, not-so-little hands the May-June issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. When you open this issue, you'll discover exactly why you want to have a subscription. That is to say, the three main stories are about three gardens that are going to provide you with inspirations for years. One is in north suburban Chicago, one is west of the city, and the third is in South Bend, Indiana. So there's no playing favorites here. And each brings many different elements to the table, including what one of the gardeners calls the New Wave Perennial Movement, based on the work of Dutch garden designer Piet Udolf, who I've met, who's been on this show, and who is responsible for Lurie Garden in Chicago's Millennium Park. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, a publication of state-by-state gardening magazines. Go to chicagolandgardening.com. But if you're in other parts of the Midwest or the South, try one of the 21 magazines in those regions by going to statebystategardening.com or call 888-265-3600.
Could an app be the answer to a better garden? Absolutely. It's the new free app, Homegrown with Bonnie Plants. Note, track, and photograph your garden's progress. Personalize your weather and reminders. Get variety info, grow guides, hands-free dictation, and more. The Homegrown with Bonnie Plants app, the sharpest tool in your garden. Download it free on the App Store.
Edwin Green is all there has to be.
Back to our trip to Lake Calumet in the city of Chicago. On the bus, on the way over to the lake, I chatted with Paul Petratus about our destination and some of the reasons it had become a dumping ground for the region.
When I lecture, I like to call Lake Calumet Chicago's other lake, because everybody knows about Lake Michigan, but here on the south side, where some people still don't go, don't know why, you know, it's expressway close, right?
Well, maybe it's because they think it's so degraded, what's the point?
Well, that is a good point, because there is a garbage layer. That's another thing the geologists call. They look at the stratification of what's in the ground. You know, they start with limestone, then there's clay. And they call us the recent phase, and they call the top layer the garbage layer. Like, you know, thanks a lot. You know, we call this culture, and, you know, but they're right. The garbage, we're right now motivating through the garbage layer.
Uh-huh. Now, do all cities have that? Or, what is peculiar and special about Chicago?
What's peculiar about Chicago that in theory it was such a great transshipment point, but in practicality, it was so flat and low that for a good portion of the year it was either wet or frozen. So Chicago started as a seasonal part of the fur trade. It's a minor seasonal port. But once we were able to lift the city up out of the ground, establish drainage in the 1850s, Chicago just blew up, because all of a sudden this transshipment point that was in potentia, how about that for the Latin? In theory, this was a great spot, but until there was enough money and infrastructure to lift us out of the mud, it's not an attractive place. I mean, the only people who stayed here over the winter were the military, you know, and they couldn't go. Because even the Indians said, man, you don't want to be here in the winter. Are you crazy? You know, even the animals are leaving. Yeah, right? So Fort Dearborn was a turning point. Finally, people were here year-round.
Uh-huh.
And so once Fort Dearborn is here, and once the Indians have left, and you know, once the land is surveyed and sold, things are in place for a major development. And those Brits that had tried to come here by military force realized they could just buy the land, and the Bank of London could begin making money, providing loans, and you see, most of the folks who invested in land during the 1830s were from London. They're just waiting for us to get our act together.
Did the marshiness of the land on the south side here around Lake Calumet have something to do with why this ended up being a dumping ground?
Yeah, it's real easy to dump. There was in 1850, there's a thing called the Swamp Reclamation Act. the state of Illinois and the federal government would pay you if you would survey your land and delineate the spots that were swamps, because swamps were an impediment to transportation. They're an impediment to development. So it quickly became sort of a map. A map-based phenomena. Okay, there's the wet area. Let's fill that in with the high ground. It just became an opportunity to fill in all this stuff. And whether you filled it in with sand or broken china or bricks or the ruins of the Chicago fire, you know, essentially a swamp is to fill in. Then all of a sudden they started thinking, wow, maybe swamps are valuable. So the Army Corps engineers went from... you know, really being the despoilers of the landscape to the cosmic Boy Scouts that were, you know, helping redefine and even remediate these swamps.
It occurs to me,
though, it's kind of hard to rebuild a swamp that took 2,000 years to build.
Yeah, well, but it also occurs to me that as time went on, the materials that ended up in the swamp were more and more toxic.
Oh, they got, you know, geez, benzene, all the byproducts, industrial stuff, you know. Initially it was just garbage, and
that you were talking glass and ceramics
and dead horses
dirt.
And you know that
stuff. Stuff that could decompose,
right? And so now you've got benzene, all of the byproducts of the steel, you know. Jobs means pollution, you know.
Oh, look, I think we're getting off here.
I think we're getting off the school bus.
On the shores of Lake Calumet, birder Walter Marsich had already set up his telescope to allow hikers and students to check out an abandoned bald eagle nest across the lake. As I said, the day was raw and extremely windy, so please excuse the wind noise.
Okay, so you've got the scope set up on the eagle's nest here?
Yeah, it's pretty obvious. Everyone's looking through the scope, and that nest was active in 2013. They were really incubating on the nest for a couple of months, but then around early May, they just abandoned it, and the reason is really not clear. It could have been anything, you know, eagles are really getting much more. They have a presence here year round now. There was at least three eagles in the area all winter, and they show up really at all of the water areas, Wolf Lake and the Little Calumet River and Lake Calumet. And so it's certainly well within reason that we might see one today. But the other exciting bird out here is the American white pelican, which just flew over, and it's absolutely a massive bird. Just bigger than an eagle, I think, and so it's really kind of cool because it's kind of wildlife in the city, wilderness in the city, I guess you
call it. American white pelican.
Yeah.
How unusual is that?
Well, their numbers have increased dramatically in the last couple of decades, and if you in the 1990s, that was an extremely rare bird in Illinois. Anywhere in Illinois, if you saw one, you were lucky. But what's happened is in the last two or three decades, their numbers have increased, and they're nesting along the Mississippi River. You can see thousands along the Mississippi River, and then hundreds will often get to the eastern part of the state as well. One of the things, one of the reasons for that, there's a couple of reasons for the increase. Part of it's probably due to the ban on DDT, because the organochlorine pesticides impacted their procreation. The eggshells would thin and the eggs would not hatch. But another thing that amazingly, and this is how everything works in funny ways, is that a lot of the white pelicans along the Mississippi River can be seen eating Asian carp. So the carp, you know, jump into the air and they snatch them out of the air. So go figure, you know. I mean,
does this bode well for their populations?
It's you know, their numbers are increasing exponentially. So we'll see how it pans out, because the thing is, I've become aware of it. I mean, I've been studying birds for 50 years, and one thing that never changes is change. It's always changing, always, you know. And, you know, new invasive species come in, like you've got these common reed here. You're familiar with the problem with ash trees and the emerald ash borer. There's just new surprises around the corner every year, every week, and so So again, when I was a kid, you know, you would never even think about seeing a bald eagle. They just weren't here. But now they're it's really a regular sight, you know. So that's, you know, one of the positive things that has happened. Same thing with the American white pelican. A lot of other birds have declined, though, simply because of changes in the habitat. Again, due to things like invasive species. So it's really changing all the time.
And I did a report recently about songbirds and the decline of songbirds,
and
some species are down, you know, 80% in the last 40 years.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that here?
Oh, it's always happening, and I mean, there are ongoing studies. The breeding bird study that documents this, because again, those are scientific studies, so it's not just just anecdotal. It actually is statistically significant, and so yeah, a lot of declines have been very well documented, and there are many reasons for the decline. It's not just a simple thing, oh well, it's because of this or that. For instance, like ring-necked pheasants. Well, ring-necked pheasant is not a native species, but ring-necked pheasant is uncanny to me, because again, this is a bird that when I was a kid, you could see really any day of the week in the Chicago area. If you go to the right habitat, an area like this would be you would flush up a pheasant.
Uh-huh.
You know? And in the last 10 years or so, the population has basically the bottom dropped out of it.
Really?
And there's a number of reasons. A lot of people point the finger at coyotes. I think that that's a part of it, because obviously they're ground nesting birds, and coyotes have easy access to nest. The coyote population, as you know, has increased exponentially in the last 3 decades. And, you know, now they're even in downtown Chicago. But there are other things. There are new pesticides being used. You know, DDT was banned, but there are new pesticides, and people give the example of that. If you're driving through a rural road through cornfields, formerly your window would be coated with insects and grasshoppers after you got done. But you don't see that so much anymore. And a lot of the insects are what the pheasants feed their young and so forth. So it's, you know, it's just a lot of things overlapping, too, because, you know, again, the population is stressed perhaps by the pesticides. Coyotes come in and pick off the weaker birds. And, you know, it's uncanny to me just that it could have gone from such a common bird that was just regular, expected, you know, any day of the week, to now it's just has no presence at all, you know. And but that's how things change.
You know? And you say that things they just continue. Change is the mantra here.
Yeah.
Is there any way to predict which way things are going to go? I mean, for instance, you talk about a charismatic megafauna like the eagle has reappeared, and American white pelican. But is there any way to predict the way other species will go?
I suppose you can do that to some extent by what's happened elsewhere, you know. And so if you see a trend happening in another part of the country where a species is expanding its population, you know, you can hypothesize that it might extend into this area. And so yeah, but a lot of times it is a big question mark. I mean, a lot of times things just happen that you had no way of predicting, you know. There's a great deal of uncertainty to it, I think.
You know? I know you're busy here, and boy, this wind is blowing here today. Does that affect bird watching on a day like this?
Yeah, it does for the obvious reason is that the smaller species of birds, most of them are going to take cover on a day like this simply because it's too dangerous for them. I mean, they're at risk from hawks and things like that. And so, yeah, a lot of them are just going to hunker down and keep out of sight on a day like this. And then, of course, you know, when the wind dies down and the weather improves, they'll be up in trees singing and so forth. So, yeah, it does. It definitely. So this is the wrong day to do this trip. But it didn't seem to hurt the pelican, though.
We had a pelican sighting.
Yeah, so it's okay. Yes,
all right.
It does, okay.
Thanks.
Also at the lake this morning was Durs Anderson, Greenways Director for Open Lands, who, despite the cold wind and uninspired history of this land, is upbeat about its future.
You saw some deer tracks here.
Yeah, and I know Big Marsh, you know, and all the vacant properties next to Big Marsh on the east side of the lake, there's a whole herd of deer out there. I had heard a story that a university biologist was doing a nationwide survey of the most isolated locations in every major municipality in the United States. And so when he looked at the Chicago metro area, he determined that, that here at the Port Authority property, you're farther away from roads. And so he was...
Even though you can hear them in the...
You can hear them, yeah. We're a good half mile away from the Bishop Ford. So he came out to see what indications of animals he would see in these most isolated locations, and he found bobcat indications here on the Port Authority property.
Have you seen bobcat indications?
No, I haven't. You know, he's the only guy I know of who's seen those indications.
He must be very good at his job. Huh?
Yeah, I suppose.
Well, what kind of fauna are you detecting here?
Well, there's, you know, this place is filled with coyotes, and but it's famous for its birds. I mean, you know, we just, as we walked in today, we saw a pelican flying by the eagle nest. You know, Walter Mars has made that comment, and, you know, where else in Chicago can you see a pelican flying by an eagle nest? I mean, that's, what, that's what's great about
but,
this area.
Is that a more or less recent development? I mean, the eagles obviously are a recent development here.
Sure, sure. Well, and I get, you know, the pelican population is expanding too. You know, that's something that's the new phenomenon, I guess, the birders are seeing. And I'm not a strong birder, so, but I know that, because I've advocated and worked a lot in this area, that I've seen the list of threatened endangered bird species that were focused just on Lake Calumet and its surrounding wetlands. You know, and there's 8 or 10 species that are still coming in here, you know, and finding a habitat to survive. And that's what makes this area so incredibly important. If we even get into landing some of the restoration monies, like from the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, which is hundreds of millions of dollars to restore Great Lakes habitat, you know, if we can have the IDNR access some of those grant monies and really begin restoring habitat here, it would be incredible.
Well, Tom Shepard was talking about that earlier and how we're at the one-yard line, and if we can just get to the goal, some of this can be realized.
Right.
But it feels like that has been the case for a long, long time, hasn't it?
No, I don't think so. I mean, okay. It's really just in the last year that so many things have come together. Uh-huh. You know, when the state of Illinois, the city of Chicago, the Port District Board itself all came to an agreement to transfer 280 acres here. I mean, that had been worked on for a long, long time. And so getting, you know, we really are at the one-yard line now. A lot of the trail system that has taken 20 years to develop, the bicycling hiking trail system in this region, I mean, we're 2 years away from having it almost all interconnected. There's still going to be a few gaps here and there, but the main systems, the CalSAG Trail, the Burnham Greenway, I mean, that's all right on the verge of all being in place. And so that provides access for people to really move around this area, to really be an ecotourist and explore, you know, the diversity of wetlands and habitats, forest preserve sites and Chicago Park District sites. There's nothing like this anywhere in the whole metropolitan region.
And given its uniqueness, once that's finished, you see an explosion of visitation to this area?
Yeah, I think there's no doubt about it. We have a national monument just
right
behind
the Pullman,
our backs.
Right.
You know, I mean, we're expecting hundreds of thousands of additional visitors a year. You know, that are people traveling on I-80, heading out to Western National Parks and visiting national monuments on the way. European visitors in Chicago that can hop on the Illinois Central and come down to Pullman and spend a day at Pullman, rent a bicycle, you know, bicycle around the area, you know, spend 2 days down here. I mean, there's so much to see down here that once the area really begins marketing itself, you know, this is some of the best birding that you're going to find in the Midwest. I mean, think of the birders in the United States.
And I bet a lot of people don't think Chicago is one of the best birding places in the Midwest.
Yeah, right, exactly. But here we are at the southern tip of Lake Michigan, you know, a major migratory flyway.
Not only that, but it's a confluence of ecosystems. Hmm. You know, the forests and the prairie and the northern woods and the ecosystems here, the marshlands that really, they're just remnants now, but mm-hmm. in some way, shape, or form still exist, don't they?
Right, yeah. It's like, you know, a couple people are saying, I mean, the birds don't forget. You know, they have enough of the habitat that they're hardwired, you know, through generations of birds that go back hundreds of years, and this is where they lived and this is where they fed. And you know, the Port Authority property, the lake never developed for industrial shipping, but the shorelines, you know, were created not to, you know, have a lot of emergent vegetation. You know, so once the restoration monies come in, which the federal government with the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative is just waiting to spend money out here to create habitat, you know, once the agencies, you know, have the ownership patterns all put together, you know, the bird habitat can grow enormously out here.
Well, thank you.
Sure.
We'll wrap up our trip to Lake Calumet on the south side of Chicago. First, let me tell you that if you're thinking about having a beautiful landscape by being kind to the environment following Earth Week, you need to try Milorganite organic nitrogen fertilizer. For more than 85 years, Milorganite has been practicing sustainability using natural organic material that is not based on the petroleum industry. Its slow-release, goof-proof formula provides consistent feeding, and it's safe for your children and pets. In fact, Milorganite is the nation's oldest recycler, focusing on reduction of consumption, waste, and emissions. And it works. Use Milorganite for all your lawn and garden needs. Visit Milorganite.com to find a garden center near you.
Captain's log, stardate 42326.1. The Enterprise is under attack by an apparently hostile life form. Mr. Worf, status report.
Inexplicable, Captain. They appear to be perambulating vegetables. We are being stalked by stalks of asparagus.
That is incorrect, Mr. Worf. Asparagus officinalis, or killer asparagus, was the subject of a very popular 21st century tome by the brilliant author Mike Novak.
Mike Novak. I'm familiar with his work.
Mike Novak was one of the smartest, funniest people in the horticultural world of the 21st century.
Sound red alert. Shields up. Tell me more, Mr. Data.
He has been variously compared to Mark Twain, Dave Barry, and Edgar Allan Poe.
Edgar Allan Poe, author of my favorite children's stories.
Captain, I am attempting to access a copy of the masterpiece. It seems to be available online at aroundtheblockpress.com.
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 Yes, Mr. Watt.
Yes, Captain. Aroundtheblockpress.com.
How many times can I say it?
Dr. Dennis Nyberg, professor emeritus from the University of Illinois at Chicago, spent much of his time explaining horticultural basics to the groups of students on the trip. But as he explained, his focus is not normally on degraded urban areas.
And do you come out here often?
No, this is not a natural area. This is the sort of area that I avoid. I live in Hagwisch. I Powderhorn is an excellent natural area. Superior Street Prairie, Savannah is a nice natural area. Sand Ridge, Green Lake. So there's a lot of nice natural areas around here and that. But not Lake Calumet has been altered so much.
Oh, yeah.
It has very little appeal to those of us who love plants.
So what brings you out here today then?
Tom asked me to...
Nobody says no to Tom, right?
Right. I mean, I'm glad to help the Southeast Environmental Task Force.
Uh-huh.
I think they're doing a great job, and so I'm glad to try and give them a boost participate.
Yeah. But if you had your druthers, this would not be where you'd be spending Earth Day.
Yeah. I enjoy. We need to communicate with youth,
uh-huh.
And so that's an important part of... thing. So, but if I were on my own, I would not come.
I completely understand. I mean, everybody had, you know, and that's actually kind of fascinating because here you are. You say you'd rather be in an area that actually has some
native plants,
native plants, and some native soil and something about it that hasn't been completely degraded. And yet, and man, this wind's really blowing. And yet, there are people here are so excited to be able to try to reclaim this area. I've been talking to them just today. You have to start somewhere, right?
Much of conservation, like it's conservation, human activity, and human activities are about money,
uh-huh.
And that's not. I'm interested in the creations of evolution, or creations of God, if you prefer to look at it that way. That's not part of money. Money isn't part of that. And so, you know, conservation spends a lot of time trying to raise money for things, mm-hmm. and a lot of it doesn't really have any real meaning to me.
You know, you look at those kids there, to them, this is a natural area compared, perhaps, to what they experience on a day-to-day basis. And yet...
They know very little about, more and more people know about how to use cell phones and play games and stuff. And the knowledge of sort of when people had animals that they were taking care of and raising, they had a sense of the natural world that they don't have now. Mm-hmm. It's now they go to the store and they buy food. The animals they see are in zoos and stuff, and so they don't have any, they don't develop a sense of what the natural world is like. And that. Mm-hmm. It's, wouldn't have been the place I would have chose to take the kids, but it's a place where you can raise money and stuff to get buses and stuff like that.
Yeah. So, all right. Thank you for your time.
It could make you wonder why. But why, wonder why.
Lois Kimmelman and Terry Radke also braved this less than optimum morning to view the future of Lake Calumet.
What brings you here today?
Well, my friend Lois was the one that said...
So she dragged you into this, huh?
She dragged me out here. But I'm really glad I came because the Southeast Environmental Task Force really does some wonderful stuff, including these walks.
Yeah, I love the Southeast Environmental Task Force. They're kind of a salmon swimming upstream, don't you think? If you want to talk about natural forces.
Well, the fact
Are
that
there
there's...
No, I don't think you're going to see any. You might see, unfortunately, this is the only place, I guess, that where Asian carp has been, actually, an Asian carp has actually been found. It was in Lake Calumet.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the only salmon you're going to find is on the buffet table over there.
But usually you're an ecologist.
Yes. Yes, that was my training. That's how I worked for many years as a consultant, doing plant and animal surveys and wetland delineation work, wetland compliance work. A lot of times if you're building a large infrastructure project, there are environmental laws that have to be observed, and you need natural area surveys.
Yeah. And so what pops into your head when you walk in an area like this and you see the you know, abandoned grain silos across the way, and you know that this place is a toxic brew of chemicals beneath our feet and in the water.
Well, it is, you know, to be honest with you, whenever I look at Lake Calumet, I always have this fantasy that I'm back, you know, 150 years, and I see it the way it originally was.
Yeah.
And it's a, you know, big dream. And the fact that you probably are never going to see that again. But, you know, our natural areas are what they are. You have what you have to work with. And there are still, you know, plants and animals here.
Yeah.
They're not all the
We were looking
ones.
At coyote poop earlier. Yeah.
Yes. There's a deer track.
And deer track, you know, and a bald eagle nest.
And bald eagle nest, right.
And the white pelican. And
all the ones that are hiding from us, too.
So yeah, well, and it's a cold day, you know. They're
really
smart.
Looking at all the things you don't have, it's important to remember all the things that you do, and that's where you need to build from.
Yeah.
Including all the people that are here. I mean, people are clearly part of this environment, and they need to be. When we set nature aside, we become separated from the things that are really the background of our life. I like to think of ecology as kind of the mother of economy.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, we tend to think of what things are going to do for us monetarily, but...
So connect the dots there. It's the mother of economy. You know, if you say it, you got to back it up.
Okay, well, all right, that's good. That's a good point. What do I mean by that? You're never... Any business that occurs... anyone here in Chicago or any other place in the world, it requires the basics of life. Clean air, clean water, healthy people, some food for them to eat, workers to, you know, to do your work that have access to shelter, and all of the basics of life, and those derive essentially from the ecology of the earth. That's where it all starts. And unless you're paying attention to that, you're going to leave something really important out of the equation.
And look at Southern California with the drought. It's making us realize that maybe we can't just develop ad nauseum without thinking about water and other.
Well, water is starting to become a very important political issue around the world, because there are places that there are shortages now.
Yeah.
They're occurring regularly.
Yeah. And I think the next wars are going to be water wars.
I've been saying that for a while.
Have you?
Yeah.
Okay. So
yeah.
It's nothing new.
Yeah. Well.
Well, our former Senator Paul Simon wrote a great book about water.
Oh,
a lot of people.
I'm not aware of that. Yeah.
What was it called?
About water resources, and I cannot remember the name of it.
Well, with that, we had enough of the cold and wind, and the fact that most of the fauna we might have seen on this day were smarter than us and hunkered down out of sight. So we headed back to the warmth of the bus. My thanks to everybody who took the time to talk to me and who took the time to care about the land and water that has been abused and neglected for too long. Happy Earth Day, week, and year, everybody. Go green or go home. See you next week. You can find more information about the Mike Novak Show at MikeNovak.net. That's MikeNowak.net for links, photos, and commentary.